The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Good morning, Chris. You are a godsend to the listening community that you serve with that voice of yours.
I turn to you just like I turn to Rush.
I'm a fan of Chris DeGaulle.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Well, the president is clearly in grave danger. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, his first State of the Union address, and it is clear that we're on the precipice of a potential national emergency. There can be no doubt about it. You've heard the news reports. Fencing is going back up around the Capitol. And the Washington, D.C. Police Department wants everyone to know they are on heightened alert. They're watching for you insurrectionists. They'll be ready. So whatever it is out there you're thinking about trying, you'd better not, because we've got the fences up. And the police stand at the ready. Now you might be asking yourself, ready for what? And the answer is, you know. And then I would say, I don't know. Yeah. Well, don't you try it. Try what exactly? I would ask. Whatever it is you're thinking. You see what they're doing? This is so classic. Yet another distraction. As I told you yesterday, as they get ready for this speech, which is going to be empty and vacuous and offer us nothing, they want to make it look again like, boy, every time these people gather together at the Capitol building, they could be taking their lives into their own hands. Why, Biden and that stupid... Did you see that video of him getting off Marine One yesterday, walking across the White House lawn? It seems like from Wilmington for the weekend and walks across the lawn in that stupid half coat. Drives me nuts, that coat on him. He's like... He's 900 years old. Like, you can only wear the I don't know what the kind of coat that is. It's like, put on an overcoat. You're a 900-year-old man. Stop trying to look like you're 20. You know, the aviator glasses. Like, no, you're not fooling anybody. And they always show him walking across the lawn, and every time you see it, first of all, he's wearing a mask. Yeah. Did you see this footage?
That's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, really?
He's hunched over. Do your best to describe if somebody hasn't. Typically, I wouldn't go this lowbrow and make my criticism of this man, where there's plenty to criticize. I don't mean to be personal. I'm nothing to look at, you know. That's why I don't do a TV show. So it's not as though I'm prone to just start picking on somebody because they look a certain way. But I'm just struck at this time of global aggression by guys like Vladimir Putin. What our president looks like. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense right now.
He projects what when you look at him? He's kind of, there's a bit of a stoop. There's kind of a hunch to him, I think, a little bit. He wears a mask. He's outside in a beautiful, clear, blue sky, sunny day, wearing his little stupid half overcoat or whatever it is. And he's a little hunched over. He's wearing that stupid black N95 mask outside by himself, walking across the lawn. But there's this, the only way I can describe it is stiffness to him. He looks like in The Wizard of Oz when the scarecrow comes down off the stick for the first time and learns to, you know, like walk. There's something kind of almost, you ever seen an old marionette?
Yeah.
It's, you know, where like the puppet, which is kind of apt, actually. The puppet pulls the strings of the leg on the puppet, and there's a bend. There's a natural joint in the leg of the puppet, and it bends when the string is pulled. That's what he walks like. This kind of pronounced, stiff, sort of half. It looks, and I'm sorry to say it, I'm not mocking elderly people. I truly am not. I love elderly people. Truly. But he looks like somebody just got out of the home and they're going back, you know, they just got out of rehab or something and they're going back to the house. He looks ill. He looks weak. He looks feeble. To me, is that being too harsh? Well, at any rate, they've got to project something here. They've got to give you something tonight. We already established they're going to try to give you the, hey, first black Supreme Court justice, huh? Turn the screws and make it hurt. They're going to try to give you how they spent more money than money's ever been spent before and pulled the economy back from the breach or something. They're going to tell you some stupid story about how all their spending saved the day. And, of course, he's going to talk about how he restored dignity and honor and how dangerous these times are. That's going to be, and they need this. They need this part of it more than anything else. Remember, they don't have much to sell by way of accomplishment. So they're going to talk about how they spent a lot of money, how he made a lot of token appointments. You know, he made a man from Pennsylvania all of his time off doing the job for paternity leave. He's got a lot of token hires, and he'll talk about the history he's made and his token hires as if their meritocracy, the system of a meritocracy, hiring people for their qualifications matters anymore. It does not. Just what they look like and if they check boxes. So he'll talk about the history he's made and the money he's spent. But most of all, he's going to try to convince you he's in grave danger even being in that building. That he brought the nation back from the brink of its own Russian invasion. January 6th was basically his Putin, and he and Democrats dodged a real bullet, which is why at this very hour we've had to sadly erect gates around this building, and the finest security forces are standing guard to protect this brave speech that I'm delivering. I'm like Zelensky. I'm serious. This is what they want you to think of him. He's very brave giving this speech, and members of Congress are almost risking their lives to gather in this joint session. Mask-free, by the way, because, oh, that's another thing they'll say. The pandemic is over. They beat it. Thank me. Biden has said he wants to unify the country. That was his big promise. That was his big speech, his inaugural. He was a unifier. He wants his legacy to be one of decency. Well, if that's true, tonight he's not going to give a deeply divisive, gaslighting, propaganda-filled speech. But unfortunately, that's exactly what we're going to get. You know that's what we're going to get. Why are they erecting barriers around the Capitol? Why the announcement of police standing guard? I even heard a newscast this morning that was, you know, talking about these security measures. They were prepared for tonight. And the news anchor concluded by saying, there are no indications of any protests planned. Have you ever heard of erecting barriers and police standing at the ready for protests that aren't scheduled to happen?
No.
That's literally our news cycle now. We're ready. We've erected gates. We've erected security measures. We're ready. For what? Well, we don't know. Well, have you heard something? No, but we're ready. It's dangerous out there. Gaslighting. I think this State of the Union speech tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be filled with lies and straw men. He'll take credit for something he deserves nothing. No credit is due this man. There's no credit to be taken except for destruction. If he wants credit, I suppose he can take credit for, you know, spending so much money. He's driven inflation to 40-year highs. He has done that. That's true. If he wants to take credit for weakening us on the world stage, a destructive withdrawal from Afghanistan, wide open borders, sky-high gas prices, crippling our own energy supply, if he wants to take credit, that's the credit he'll take tonight. But, of course, that's not what he'll say. This guy's numbers, folks, his numbers are in the toilet. Every single poll, even with Democrat voters. Biden's poll numbers are in the dump because his policies and his judgment is so destructive. Watching this footage of the government of Ukraine, Kharkiv, a government building being bombed today. It's just amazing he's going to give a State of the Union as Russia's on the march. And say what? You know, if he really wanted to look heroic and historic tonight, he would immediately announce, we're really going to make Russia hurt. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to produce more oil than Russia does by a lot because we can. We're going to become the new global gas station that they used to be. And you know what? Even tell the truth. And as such, market forces being what they are, this is going to be costly for a minute or two. But hang on. When we're done, we'll be awash in our own natural oil supply. And we will once again be on track to be the world's supplier of oil. And we will crush Putin without firing a single shot for this outrageous action in Ukraine. Now, if he wanted to say that, that'd be a hell of a statesman. That would be a moment. That would be a moment I'd stand and even applaud the stupid old man. But he's not. Instead, I'll promise what he's going to say is something similar to what Peppermint Patty, Circle Back Girl, said.
And now, what we're seeing in Russia is fueled by fossil fuel money. And what we must do is move away quickly from our consumption of fossil fuels. It's because we continue to rely on oil that people like Vladimir Putin can fund their designs on invasions in Ukraine.
You buying that? Because he'll try it. Almost, I'd be willing to almost bet you money that tonight he's going to try to look the nation in the eye and tell you that Vladimir Putin is invading Ukraine and the only reason he can do it is because you and I continue to fill our trucks and our SUVs with gasoline. It's your fault. I'll bet you. Yeah, I mean, he may not say it quite that directly, but you mark my words and we'll come back and score me tomorrow and see if I'm right. That he in some way tries to make a veiled suggestion that you and I using cheap, plentiful oil, which is right underneath our own feet, and we don't need to rely on Russia to acquire it, but because we do, because he refuses to produce it here anymore, it's our fault that we consume so much of it. And if only we would get on board with wind and solar. Never let a crisis go to waste, remember. Much like COVID, they milked that thing for 2 years and they accomplished a great deal using an emergency. Well, now Russia's on the march and invading Ukraine. Pretty bad looking pictures. You want Russia to continue to be aggressive like this? We're not going to send our troops. We can't let Russia continue to move and encroach into Ukraine and then maybe even further into Europe, can we? You want to stop this? We can't send our own men and women, so what are we going to do to stop it? Well, the only sensible thing we can do is make sure Vladimir Putin is crushed financially. And the only way we do that? Stop using his oil. And this will make sense to a lot of Americans on the left. These green wackos that think fossil fuels are more sinister and dangerous than Vladimir Putin. You hear what I'm saying? I know you do. There are people in this country that have more sleepless nights, more problem with, get more animated by your use of fuel in your car than Vladimir Putin marching into Ukraine today. I'm serious. They think gasoline and oil and natural gas is more dangerous than the Russian dictator. Biden is so bad at his job. He's objectively bad at his job. He's not trusted. And rather than the humility that he should show tonight, things are a mess. He's obviously not going to own it and say he caused it. But rather than say things are a mess or at least acknowledge things are not going well, you can expect hubris instead. You can expect blame shifting instead. Undoubtedly, everything going on all around us is someone else's fault. He is bringing dignity and decency back to the White House. I'm sure he will take the opportunity to invoke Trump somehow. What creative way do you think he's going to bring Trump into this? Just remind us again how awful Trump was, how much better things are now that he's back. Dignity, order has been restored. I'm back, baby. The deceit in this speech is going to be extremely high. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but what else has he? What successes, as I asked you yesterday, what could he possibly say today as a signature success? Other than a celebration of destruction and a bunch of token hires. Spending, crushing the economy, inflation through the roof. But he spent a bunch of money. He sent you a check. Well, we'll see. I'm going to, I think tonight I'm going to do something, Fast Eddie, I haven't done before. I think if we can pull it off, and I'll let you know. Stay close on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'll render my final verdict, but our digital team is working on something where I think tonight I'm going to be offering my own real-time State of the Union rebuttal.
Hey.
Yeah. We're working on a couple of things that I think we might have ready tonight. I figure if we've got to watch this thing, I'm going to watch it Mystery Science Theater style. Split screen. So I think we've figured that out. I think we might try that tonight. Not sure. I'll keep you posted. Follow along on Facebook and Twitter, Getter, Instagram, and I'll let you know. That's supposed to start at what? 8 o'clock Eastern tonight, I think?
Oh, I thought 9.
Oh, 9. That's yeah. Right. That's awfully late for him.
I was going to say 6 p.m. in Cali. That's, you know.
Well, that's true. But 9 o'clock? He's normally in bed by then. This could be bad. 9 o'clock is late. Seriously, 9 o'clock's very late for him. He does his best work about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You think not too early, not too late.
Think we'll physically see him before 9 o'clock tonight?
Do you know that there are people that walk that I was telling you about, him getting off Marine One and walking across the lawn? There are people that believe that that's a double. I'm serious. If you get on social, I'm not, no. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you get on social media and you look at that video that's been flying around of him getting off the helicopter yesterday, it's at a distance. And I actually thought, I will say, I'm not feeding this, but I will say, I kind of looked at it and I was like, number one, it just looks weird. Number two, he's wearing the big black mask outside, which is just weird. He looks weird. And the shot of him is from a distance. There's no zoomed in, up close, tight shot. And I thought, looking at the back of his head, his hair looked a little long. Like he needed a haircut, like he's growing it out and back.
You could tell it's taking everything, like he's concentrating so hard on walking.
Yes.
You know?
That's the word. Good. Good description. There's a concentrated effort. One step, two step. One step, two step. Looks like a guy, again, that just got out of rehab. But there are people that really believe, sincerely, I think, believe that that is not Joe Biden. That is a double. But this is where we are. Folks, this is the lack of trust in our institutions is at such a high in this country. No one believes anything. Just because it's on your TV, people don't believe it. I mean, I get more than my fair share of mail and notes from people that don't even believe what we're watching with Russia and Ukraine. And not that they don't believe it's real, that Russia is doing this thing to Ukraine. But they don't believe that this is meant to be what it is, but rather it is meant to be a distraction from something else. And I'm not here to talk you out of feeling or thinking anything. I've told you before, the best political movie, I think, in recent memory, honestly, is Wag the Dog. And it's all about when the president's political fortunes are going south, they completely manufacture a war on a movie soundstage to distract the country into thinking there's a perilous war. Footage of a young girl, a young Kirsten Dunst, they hire as an actress. They give her a cat. And they put her on a soundstage and they superimpose bombs going off all around the little girl who pretends she's running through the village with a little cat. And so the viral footage is beamed throughout the country of everybody gripped by this little girl and her cat running through this village as it's being bombed. It was all done on a soundstage. You watch Wag the Dog, it'll make you crazy. You'll watch this and you'll think, well. So this speech tonight is yet another attempt to make you think Joe Biden, the American way, democracy itself is in grave danger. This is what the left is telling themselves. I saw this a lot yesterday on social media. You see what Russia's doing to Ukraine? That's what Trump and Republicans want to do to you. Have you heard that yet, Fast Eddie? Trump is Putin. I'm serious. Trump is the authoritarian. Trump is Putin, and Trump, he would do to probably the United States individually. He'll do to Kentucky. Or Massachusetts. No, he'd target the blue states first. If Trump won a second term, he'd go invade these blue states with his Gestapo tactics. He'd seize anyone who didn't agree with him. He's the authoritarian. They're cheering. The narrative is CPAC was a big gathering of people cheering Putin. And Trump is a Putin sympathizer. And our kindly old president, who eats ice cream and labors to walk across the grass, he's doing everything he can in his feeble, frail, weak condition to stave off this monster, not just in Europe, but also here domestically. You see, he's brave. He's like Zelensky of Ukraine. He's doing everything he can. What a brave nobleman our Biden is. Standing in the breach, staring down tyranny, overseas and here at home. Why, look. Look outside this building where I deliver this speech, he'll say. Fencing. Security. Grave danger. And of course, in reality, none of it's true. But I predict these are some of the things you're going to hear tonight. We'll come back and grade my predictions tomorrow, but you can bet it's going to be full of gaslighting because there's absolutely no substance to celebrate. The state of our union is what? I mean, if you had to answer that right now, fill in the blank. You know, they always have that classic line where they say, ladies and gentlemen, here tonight, the United States, the state of our union is, you know, it's usually always like a line where everybody stands and applauds. Hey, the state of our union is what? Sound? Solid? What's he say? He can't. So he's got to tell you that the state of our union is perilously close to being lost. Democracy itself in danger. And only he can save us. At least that's what I think he'll say.
Mike Gallagher, coming up at 9. Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 and 990theanswer.com.
Did you hear DeSantis, by the way? This stud. I just love this guy. It excites me to think that we might have a governor like this someday. Maybe. Could it be? Possibly. I don't want to speak ill of any of our gubernatorial candidates, but let's just be honest. We don't have a history. Even when we have Republican governors, we don't really have a history of governors with a lot of rhetorical flourish, do we?
No. Tell me, let me think. Tom Corbett. It was
Any of the Toms.
Yeah.
I think most of the governors in Pennsylvania have been named Tom, and they've all been just about as dull. Anyway, DeSantis says yesterday, I'm not sending my National Guard for your little fake display of bravery tonight. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis announcing yesterday his state will not deploy National Guard members to the nation's capital ahead of Tuesday's planned State of the Union address. DeSantis said President Biden has issued a request for governors to deploy members of their National Guard from their respective states, and he made it abundantly clear he has no intention of doing so. Good for DeSantis. Now, of course, when the president calls out the National Guard from various states, what does he hope will happen? That each state and each state's news media will report, members of our National Guard are on their way to the Capitol to protect the president tonight as his very life hangs in the balance to address the nation. And you might pause and say, hangs in the balance? The president's in danger? Why? We don't know, but I think you do. So we've erected gates and barriers, and the guard's been deployed from points all over the country because the president's in grave danger. Of what? You know. January 6th? Yeah, but that was like over a year ago, and that was a thing, that was a day. And wouldn't they love to try it again? Well, do you have any evidence that they're going to try it again? Oh, I think they will. So we just now we erect gates and deploy the National Guard anticipating something might happen on a scale like that? At random? You can never be too safe. Not in these perilous times. Not with a monster like Trump out there stirring people up. Yeah, but can hundreds of thousands of people just surprisingly mobilize and storm the Capitol? You can't be too safe. Not in these perilous times. Look at what Putin's doing to Ukraine. Did you just compare Putin invading Ukraine to what might happen to the Capitol building tonight suddenly, sporadically, randomly, that citizens of the United States have the power to topple the Capitol building? This is how stupid it is. And DeSantis will not participate in the theater. And good for DeSantis. Speaking of governors, last night, and we do this every Monday now through the primary season, we're trying to get you to know the candidates who are running on the Republican side just a little bit better. I think these have gone very, very well. I tell you, Fast Eddie is like air traffic control in there. He is constantly trying to schedule with these campaigns to make it so that each and every one of them has some time where we sit down on a Zoom call and we invite you in to ask the questions. The point of the whole thing is not to hear me bloviate, because I can certainly have them here and ask any questions I want. The point is to bring them in on the call so that you can ask them questions directly. And I'm really thrilled that so many of you have. I flatly forgot to tell you that Bill McSwain was going to be on the call last night, and so that's who we met with, our former, I keep wanting to call him district attorney. That's not the word. U.S. attorney, thank you. The United States attorney from the southeastern part of the state, Bill McSwain, who's running for governor in Pennsylvania, was our guest last night. And lots of great questions. If you have not watched these yet, we do them. We're going to do them every Monday. And we're scheduled through what, Fast Eddie? Like,
Definitely the first week in May. Now, next week, we would have had Scott Martin, but he did suspend his campaign since. Okay. So everybody else is still booked through May.
Yeah, the problem is we had back-to-back Mondays we skipped.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm a creature of habit. And when my habits get broken, I just forget. And so we did back-to-back Mondays where we weren't doing it. And I forgot to tell you that we were doing McSwain last night. So by the time I literally didn't remember until Eddie texted me yesterday afternoon, hey, don't forget, you're talking to McSwain tonight. I totally forgot. So I feel bad that I didn't give you ample warning on McSwain. And we're doing this again next Monday, or we're not?
Not next Monday, because that would have been Scott Martin, who's since suspended his campaign.
All right, I'm giving you an assignment to remind me next Monday to tell everybody about next Monday. Because
okay.
I will not remember anybody a week from Monday. We took two, did one, take another. There's no shot in the world I'm going to remember next Monday. So I'm just telling you right now, Mondays are when we do these things. We're going to try to meet every... We think we're going to meet every one of them, right?
Yes. That's the plan. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, speaking of, while we're talking about meeting the candidates, this is another one I don't want to forget. We have been in perpetual guest booking and hosting mode for about a solid week. And I can't remember to pre-promote or tell you what's coming anymore. It's just like a turnstile.
Yes.
So, like, I knew this, then I forgot, and here it is, and I didn't tell you that Dr. Oz is going to be on the show today at 8:30.
He is. Yep.
Live in person.
Live and in person is the plan.
We have no reason to believe that won't happen.
As the producer, I always think there's a reason to believe that won't happen, but hey, at this hour, we have him.
Yeah, it's ultimately nothing you control or I control. It is what it is. But at 8:30, we believe we're going to hear for the first time live Dr. Oz.
Yes.
All right. So there is nobody, and I mean this, there's nobody in our business that's working harder to bring you every one of these people than Fast Eddie. He has tortured himself trying to get all of these campaigns to commit to a schedule and make themselves available for you. So, and then he goes to the added bonus step of taking all of these interviews and warehousing them in one. I mean, do you understand? I'm going to brag on our producer for a second, because quite frankly, the hand-holding that he does to make your life easier for those of you that want to seek out this information is extraordinary. Most other shows and their producers would go, yeah, you're on your own. Tough luck. Not Fast Eddie. He not only schedules these people, he then goes the added step of making sure you don't have to do any work at all. You just have to show up and look at a page where all these interviews with all these dozens of people are in one spot. So you can sit and consume and or watch all of the interviews we do with all of these people in one place. And it's because people go, I don't know where to find all these people. Could you please make it convenient for me? As though Eddie's got nothing else going on in his life. But he does it anyway, tirelessly and without complaint. So I'm just going to brag on him for a minute that not only does he organize all these people, but then he warehouses them in one spot so that you, as a Pennsylvania voter, know where to find them and listen. There's no other show that does that, just so you know. And by the way, don't charge you a nickel for it. You know, in this day and age where everybody's charging you $5, $10 a month for this and that, no, sir. We're a high caliber, high quality service, completely free of charge. All right, just wanted you to know that. So, with that in mind, some of you may have missed the conversation with McSwain last night, and I wanted you to hear some of it. We're not going to play it all. What did we do, 40 minutes with him?
Yeah, we did 40. Yep.
I think we learned quite a bit. One thing I didn't know, and this is not, it was not a gotcha, and you'll hear it here. I think we're going to play, I don't know, a few minutes of it for you so you can hear it for yourself. But I learned a couple of things about McSwain I didn't know. His history, his political history that comes up during this conversation, and I think he answered it well. So always like to get your perspective on these things at 610-850-0990. There's a story in front of me today, by the way, as you listen. Inside the chaotic GOP primary for governor in Pennsylvania. It's the headline from NBC News. At a debate last month for Republicans running to be Pennsylvania's next governor, candidates were asked whether they believe President Joe Biden legitimately won the state in 2020. Most danced around the question by acknowledging that Biden is the current president or praising former President Trump while vowing to tighten the state's election laws. John Ventry began, "No, Joe Biden is not the legitimate winner." His words immediately smothered by whistles and cheers from the audience in western Pennsylvania. The moment underscored the quandary Pennsylvania Republicans find themselves in as they try to reclaim the governor's mansion in a presidential battleground state that Biden won narrowly. A dozen candidates are fighting for the nomination, many striving for a blend of conservative ideals and electability that can be tough to balance against Trump's grievances and election lies. This came up last night. I asked McSwain, so are you ready for this? If you become the nominee, that you're a Trump appointee, you're nothing but a Trumpist and a Trump sympathizer. I hope you're ready, because if Shapiro's their nominee, which he'll probably be, that's what they're going to say. And you're not just a Trump toady. You're the worst kind. You were one he picked. Right? So it's hilarious because the media is doing exactly what we knew. They've targeted Pennsylvania as a particularly important state, obviously. They know the Senate race is a toss-up. They think it's probably pretty likely the governor will be a Republican. Or it certainly could easily lean that way. So their play is, it's a branch of what we just talked about a little while ago. January 6th, Joe Biden's in danger giving the State of the Union tonight. And similarly, Pennsylvanians, are you going to elect a senator or a governor who was part of the insurrection or encourages the insurrection or thinks the election wasn't legitimate? Or will you choose someone who is sober and somber and realistic? You know, an Adam Kinzinger or Liz Cheney. That's what they want. They want one of the old Toms. They want an old Tom to come along and go, I think that Joe Biden was the legitimate winner and he's a fine fellow and we're all Americans and I'm barely a Republican. And I'm actually very sorry I have to call myself a Republican. Oh, now that's the kind of Republican Pennsylvania needs, would the media say. They don't want a Republican standing up and saying, no, I think the legitimacy of the election was very much in question. And I think Joe Biden's terrible at his job. Can't have a real Republican and real opposition. So with that in mind, some of the conversation last night with Bill McSwain.
Let me get right to one that some people have pointed out to me, and I didn't know, to be honest with you. This was something that someone pointed out to me, and I just want you to answer it and tell me whether it's so or not. It was shared with me that up until 2005, and I didn't know this, is this true that you were a registered Democrat in Chester County until 2005? True or no?
I don't know what the exact year was, but when I was much younger, I was a registered Democrat. Always considered myself a conservative Democrat, but then the Democratic Party has changed a lot. And as I became more mature in my adult years and began my career as an attorney, I switched my registration and I describe myself now as a conservative Republican, a law and order, free market, constitutional conservative. And it takes sometimes a while to really arrive at your bedrock beliefs. And I've had a lot of different experiences in my life. I've had a lot of formative experiences. And today I can tell you, I know exactly what I believe and why, and I'm out there fighting for it.
What made you a Democrat? I mean, this is not a gotcha, I promise. I'm just curious, what from your perspective, your life's perspective politically, made you a Democrat once upon a time?
I think a lot of people are influenced in their childhood by their parents, obviously. And my father was a Democrat. My father's a social worker. And before he was a social worker, he was a Presbyterian minister. And that was probably the chief initial influence. So in my 20s, I started out registering as a Democrat. But that as I came to evolve with my own opinions and experiences with the world, I knew that Republicans were the ones who had the answers, who had the policies, who had the right values to make people's lives better.
Do you, this is more of a 30,000 foot philosophical view. I know you've toured a lot, traveled a lot over the month, been talking to a lot of registered Republican voters. There is such a fundamental mistrust voters have, I'm sorry to say, in our institutions, and I think justifiably so in many ways. So everyone looks at all candidates, not just you, but all candidates with heightened suspicion. We're very cynical right now about our candidates, things they say versus how they act. What would you say about that?
I would say that a lot of that suspicion is justified. A lot of times people get elected saying one thing, and then once they're in office, they don't follow through. And I'm the type of person who follows through. I am somebody who cares a lot about my reputation, and it's a reputation that I've built throughout my professional career. And if I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And in a lot of ways, I'm a stubborn person, but I think I'm stubborn in a positive way, and that I'm stubborn about the things that I think are right. And I think you saw that every day when I was U.S. attorney. I was very stubborn about enforcing the law, about protecting the rule of law, not letting any criticism affect what I was doing or the way I was directing my office. In a lot of ways, Philadelphia might be described as the most leftist, lawless jurisdiction in the country. I certainly felt that way during certain periods of my tenure when, for example, Philadelphia was pushing heroin injection sites, which I stopped and defeated. When Philadelphia was all in on the riots, which I also stepped in and stopped. So you can't care about criticism. You can't really care about being liked. You should be focused on being respected and doing the things that you have promised that you will do. And that's the type of person I am.
We're live here on Facebook with Bill McSwain. If you are tuning in, you're just tuning in and you have a question for him. He wants to be the Republican nominee to, we believe, ostensibly take on Josh Shapiro. Democrats seem to think, Bill, that he is, it's a fait accompli. They don't want to talk about anybody else. I know there are other Democrats running, but it seems the Democrat Party and the media have all decided it's going to be Josh Shapiro. So sorry, other Democrats. Whereas the Republican field is quite wide open right now, it seems. How do you read that?
Well, it looks like he is going to be the nominee, and I think that's good for me. I think that I match up really well against him, and politics is all about matchups. I mean, I'm a conservative. He's a liberal. I am someone who's never run for office before. He's a career politician. I like freedom. He likes mandates and government control. I'm an experienced, real prosecutor. He's a prosecutor in name only who's never actually prosecuted a case in his life.
That's just some of our conversation with Bill McSwain. We went 40 minutes on Facebook last night, but I don't have Facebook. Fast Eddie. But I don't have Facebook. I'm not on Facebook.
It'll be on YouTube, and we'll have it in podcast form, also at 990theanswer.com.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Kills himself for you. Yeah, we get into the conversation with McSwain. I ask him, the news broke yesterday. Pennsylvania Republicans now asking the United States Supreme Court yesterday to overturn a state court-approved congressional map, arguing the Democrat-controlled court exceeded its authority by imposing the map without the legislature's approval. The appeal from several Republican candidates called the court decision flagrantly unconstitutional, asked the justices to throw out the redistricting map. This happened 10 years ago. Pennsylvania Supreme Court drew the lines and they stood before. They've done it again. The Republicans are challenging it. The Supreme Court will probably not take it up. Sorry to be a sad sack.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, your show is awesome. Hi, good morning. Love you, love your staff. Thank you so much. God bless y'all.
Love you and Fan Eddie and the show.
You guys are doing a fantastic job. Thank you very much, Chris.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
This gentleman came to town when I was just hired at Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer, and it was such a thrill the night that he and Sebastian Gorka were in Philadelphia, and I got to make a surprise announcement that I just moved across the street from another station and joined the team. And ever since, I can tell you, no looking back, and this is sincere, working with Salem and working with people of this caliber, particularly our next guest, Dennis Prager, has been a thrill, and I just regret that I didn't spend most of my career working with Salem and this team. Dennis is one of the thought leaders, really, in my opinion, in the country. And I'm eager to talk to him about a thousand things, but he has a brand new book out called The Rational Passover Haggadah. And I welcome him to the show as it releases today. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Well, it's an honor to be with you. It's a beautiful introduction. Thank you. And yes, today is publication day.
I mean it sincerely, and I don't mean to embarrass you or sound as though I'm blowing smoke, but you wrote something, if I may, before we talk about the book, just in about a week ago, that meant more to me than just about anything I've read throughout COVID. And that was what you wrote related to our major religions. You wrote COVID-19 and the failure of America's major religions. My church closed for over a year, Dennis, and it just devastated me personally and my family. And what you wrote, I thought, was just so important, and we should not stop talking about it, in my view.
Well, I have so much to say on that. One of my mottos is a dark humor. I don't care what religion you're a member of, as long as you're embarrassed by it.
That's fantastic.
Because it's fantastic because it's all humor must be based on truth.
Yes.
Otherwise, there's nothing funny about it. It's just silly. Your church made an error of such colossal proportions that, as I wrote at the end of my article, and by the way, of course, I'm Jewish, and the exact same thing happened to synagogues. So, and the same thing happened to the four major religions in the United States: Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, and Mormon. And they all obeyed irrational secular authority. Of course, you obey rational secular authority. Before you close your church or your synagogue, you better have really, really powerful reasons. And they didn't. And nobody said you had to come, but they said you can't come.
Yes.
And what about the churches that did open? Was there mass death? Was there mass hospitalization? No, but the priest, minister, or rabbi said, I have priorities in life. My church will remain open. You don't have to come, but it will be open.
And I can't help but remember how those people who stayed open were castigated as some kind of lunatics.
The dominant media culture in the country does that to anything that they differ with. If you don't agree with us, the woke, you are a lunatic. It's not there are two valid opinions. You are a lunatic. And there's always the enemy to fight. The unvaccinated became the enemy. It's an unbelievable. And by the way, the proof of the irrationality, and there are many proofs, is that it is now universally acknowledged, except by the media, that natural immunity is better than vaccinated immunity.
Yes. You know, I did a quick search of you, which I know is always sort of dangerous, but I did a quick Google search just to see what would pop up about Dennis Prager before you and I talked. And by now, you have such a career of success behind you. I would imagine you only chuckle or maybe even feel somewhat mildly complimented when Rolling Stone calls you, what was it, something like America's most dangerous COVID jackass or something like that. I know the word jackass was used in one of their headlines.
Yeah, well, you know, so you'll love this. So wherever I go, I mean, I'm not mobbed, but wherever I go, there'll be people who come over just to say thank you or something beautiful and take a selfie, especially airports and restaurants. Okay. So this is a common line I get. Dennis, just want you to know, my wife and I really love you, but you hear that all the time. And then I say, you know what? Why don't you Google Dennis Prager, jackass?
Yeah, I would imagine, given what they write about you, and there's some aggressive stuff, you can't ever get tired of hearing, I love you, for heaven's sakes. Dennis Prager's new book, by the way, I should mention, is called The Rational Passover Haggadah, and I promise I want to ask you about, lots about it, so I don't think I'm blowing it off. I just your clarity... And I'll confess, Dennis, that I haven't been a longtime listener. I've listened to you probably for the last 5 years. And your faith and your discussion and exploration of the faith, has that always been central to your show?
Always. Mm-hmm. I have a very simple but apparently radical theology. God wants us to be good. And you have no idea how controversial that is. Who needs God? Oh, God has other demands. I mean, that simple statement is not universally acknowledged. And by the way, I might add, because of the founders, although, of course, this predates the founders, God wants us to be free.
Yes. Is that why you're so hated? Because you speak with such a simple, faith-based clarity?
Yes.
Is that
I
it?
Think so.
Yeah.
I do think that's correct. And the only way, apparently, that people deal with me who differ is to mock and to defame, and et cetera. They don't debate. People should understand this. Most conservatives do not understand this. And certainly people on the left. The left smears, but it never debates. Do you know that I've offered tens of thousands of dollars that I would raise to debate any left-wing columnist, which means 99% of the columnists of the New York Times, anywhere they want, their house. They could pick the moderator. and or to have Larry Elder debate, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yes.
Or Ibrahim X. Kendi. They would never debate.
Dennis, I've asked this question of Jewish brothers and sisters of mine over the years, but I know you've answered this plenty. I know you've written even about it. Simply put, how do you describe to someone what makes the Jewish American in particular so left-wing politically?
Yes.
What is that?
It's a very fair question, and it goes under the heading of, I don't care what religion you're in, as long as you're embarrassed by it. So very quickly, Orthodox Jews are conservative. Jews who believe that the Torah, the five books of Moses, are divine documents, that God gave the Ten Commandments, these Jews are overwhelmingly conservative. It's the Jews who abandon these fundamental beliefs of Judaism that are on the left. But Christians don't realize the question is applicable to Christians.
Yes.
The only difference is that when a Jew abandons Judaism, they're still called Jew. But when a Christian abandons Christianity, he's not called Christian.
That's it. It's that simple. Yeah.
Yep.
What do Christians for me? I'm raised a Methodist all my life. Making the switch though, because boy, Methodist Church has pulled away from the station entirely. What do I need to understand if I were to pick up your book?
People who have already seen the book, which to my great joy is a major bestseller already, and I'm saying this, it's not the money. Nobody writes this rational Bible or this rational Passover Haggadah to get money. But I mean, it would be great, but that's not my purpose. But I'll give you an example. Most non-Jews do not know that Judaism 100% unambivalently, unambiguously believes in and affirms the afterlife. Most Jews don't believe in an afterlife. Most Jews have secular views. But Judaism, it's one of the 13 principles of the Jewish faith that there is an afterlife, that God judges people in the afterlife. So people should not fall into the trap of saying, what do Jews believe? That's not relevant. What does Judaism believe? And by the way, that's in this book. I want to just explain it for 30 seconds.
Please.
This is the Passover is the oldest holiday in the world. The Passover Seder is the longest ongoing ritual on earth. It's 3,000 years old. It was probably Jesus' Last Supper, the Passover Seder. And that's from the New Testament. To understand this is to understand the Western world, is to understand the roots of Judaism and Christianity, to understand this holiday. That's why I wrote this. This is not just for Jews any more than my rational Bible is. I have 4,000 reviews on Amazon on Genesis and Exodus. Deuteronomy is coming out later this year. And the vast majority are from Christians. So this is about the fundamental issues, like God wants us to be free, like the afterlife, like the importance of ritual. You cannot, a nation or a religion cannot survive without rituals. That's why the left has attacked our rituals. We don't have them anymore. July 4th is a day to have hot dogs and beer. And a Memorial Day is a day to take off. Thanksgiving is Turkey Day. Everything has been denuded of ritual. And it's a real question whether Americans will survive as Americans. So that's the importance of this ritual, the longest ongoing in human history.
The Rational Passover Haggadah is available today. Now it's available wherever you get books, online or in person. And Dennis, do you see in terms of the future for the faiths, the major faiths in this country? Maybe this is Pollyanna. Maybe it's hopeful. I don't know. But as we see, obviously, a huge inflow, candidly, illegally in many cases, from the South. The one thing that I will say about so many people to our South is many of them seem to be of a pretty deep abiding faith. I don't know if you can say that generally, but many. Does that translate into something positive? I don't know. Maybe not.
There's hope, but I remind people, I mean, talking about having embarrassing aspects of your faith, my heart goes out to my Catholic friends, my Catholic listeners. I mean, look at their Pope. He's the vicar of Christ on earth to a Catholic.
Yes.
And look at his views. His views are almost indistinguishable from those of the Latin American left. You know, he's from Argentina, and liberation theology is basically leftism with a cross.
Yes.
So it's a tough call.
Yeah, I wonder ultimately if we're, I mean, I left my church over the COVID thing. The CRT stuff popped up when we finally did reconvene. It was just a nightmare. And I'm so glad you wrote what you wrote and that you've been writing and talking about what you're talking about. Between our schools, what you see parents up, you know, they're rising up at school board meetings. But now, well, not just now, but people like me are waking to, obviously, our churches have been penetrated. I mean, these are, you know, these things that are most intimate in our communities have been hijacked.
Well, so I have been saying literally all of my life since I wrote a book at 25, my first book, I've been saying this very sad truism that the left has influenced in the last 100 years, the left has influenced religion far more than religion has influenced society. Mm.
Thank you for your work, Dennis. By the way, I should mention PragerU before I let you go. Congratulations on it. That is shared and passed around by more people, young people, which I know was the whole goal of that project for you. You must be so pleased with its growth.
Well, I should hire somebody to video me at an airport, and it would hearten people to see how many young people come over and get a selfie with me.
Yes.
We have 1 billion views a year, and 65% are under 35 years of age.
Wow. What was the secret to it?
You know, I don't know. It is very interesting because our videos are meant for anybody. I mean, 35 or 85. I think the fact that we present ideas as so clearly and compellingly in 5 minutes has struck a nerve with young people who never hear this stuff from elementary school through graduate school. They don't hear this. And the people who present are of such high caliber, and the presentation is so professional, it has won young people over.
Do you like doing the radio show?
Oh, I love it. I actually, it's funny you should ask, because in August there will be 40 years of broadcasting.
Good grief.
And I am as enthused about doing the show today as I was in the beginning. My life, this is very corny, and it's risky to say because it sounds so corny, but it's so true, I don't care. My life from high school was devoted, and I wrote it in my diary as a junior in high school, so it's proof. I want to influence people to the good. Why would I not be excited to talk to millions of people on the radio?
Yes.
Not to mention, you know, on the fireside chat and other videos at PragerU. I mean, I thank God that I have this work. And so, yes, I'm very, very excited. And there's no lack of human tragedy and evil to talk about.
No, there's not. You have harnessed the ability to speak as a friend, speak intimately, warmly, casually, conversationally. You're some of the very best radio there is, and people just adore you in Philadelphia on every station that you're on across the country. But I feel sincerely very, very fortunate to be a part of your team.
Well, look, that this comes from you is especially meaningful. You're a distinguished broadcaster yourself, and I thank you for that. And again, I just want people to know that this book is meant to change their life, and even though they never heard the word Haggadah, it doesn't matter. It's, the oldest ritual. So the rational Passover, Haggadah, just, you know, put in rational Passover, I'll come up.
Dennis, congratulations on all your success and continued blessings for many years to come. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. It was a great, great honor to be with you.
It isn't often that I feel intimidated doing an interview. And that one intimidated me. That guy, I told Fast Eddie when I knew we were going to talk to him, I said, I couldn't carry his briefcase. He's just so freakishly smart. He's an intellectual giant, sincerely. And one of the kindest guys I've ever met. He could be a self-righteous ass if he wanted to be. And I'd say, well, he has every right. He's earned it. And he's not. Like, he'd sit and smoke a cigar with you. He's just as cool as he can be. It's 7:21 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. I'm walking to New Orleans.
To parachute when I get through walking these blues, when I get back to New Orleans.
Fat Tuesday, Ash Wednesday tomorrow. Telephone number 610-850-0990. They're going to have full-blown Mardi Gras festivities too. This is, it's just amazing. COVID's over. The memo went out. Every big city mayor in the country. All at once and everywhere, in unison, masks off, parties on. Back in the pool, everybody. Science! Presto! And State of the Union. How stupid do people think we are? Sincerely, they must think we're really first-rate dopes.
They do.
I'm just so insulted by the whole... I appreciate some political gamesmanship. I do.
I do, too.
I appreciate the game and the joust. This is so over-the-top, like, Roadrunner Coyote stupid. Like, it's not even smart. It's not even sophisticated. It's so blatantly absurd and patently obvious what they've done. On Friday, he nominates the historic first black female Supreme Court justice. On Monday, COVID's over. And on Tuesday, he gives his first State of the Union address. Oh, by the way, with steel barriers and the National Guard called out. I mean, everyone sees this, right? Even Democrats see it, but they're not going to admit it. But they know exactly what's going on. We all know what's going on. The memo I read to you yesterday. Did I read that memo to you yesterday? I don't think I did.
Just some points from it. In fact, I read it.
You know, I did. And I'm gonna do that. Don't let me forget.
Okay.
We have Dr. Mehmet Oz coming up live on the show today. And in fact, I'm going to share with him points of this internal memo. He would be the perfect guest to introduce the Democrats' new talking points on COVID to, wouldn't he? If anybody is going to be able to refute them, it would be Dr. Oz.
We would hope.
So we'll bring him in to I have lots of questions for Dr. Oz. This is his first appearance here. I know that you do, too. So I hope I will get them asked. I don't anticipate I'm going to get everything asked. So I'm just going to say to you right now, don't write me and say, I can't believe you didn't ask. I only have so much time. There's a universe of things to talk about, and this is my first conversation. So don't get mad if I don't ask the thing that's eating away at you. I'm going to try to get as many in as I can. This has not been the easiest of schedules to coordinate. I'll just put it to you that way. So we've got him for the time we've got him, and hopefully it will be the first of many visits. So in the meantime, here's my question for you. The president's State of the Union address is tonight. What do you expect we'll hear? You want to make a prediction on what will come? I always like to get your thoughts on what you are pretty confident we're going to hear. Before I quit drinking, I used to call it the State of the Union drinking game. But now I'm a teetotaler, so I got to think of it a different way. I don't know, like State of the Union bingo or something. You get a point every time the stupid old man who pretends he's president says what. Or if you're still a drinker out there and you can handle your liquor, take a shot every time the stupid old man says what. Fast Eddie, for instance, said equity is one. Every time you hear equity... Here's a question I have. He's not going to say it multiple times. Do you think the stupid old man is going to mention Liz Cheney by name?
Ooh. That's a great question. I will say no. I will say he'll say some of my colleagues on the other side that are more respectable than others or something like that. So I'm going to say no.
He will hold up in general some brave Republicans who have resisted the radicalism of their own party. There are still good Republicans who have stood up and stood in the breach against the insurrectionist Trumpists. He may not name Cheney by name, but he will reference them for sure. I agree. I believe that's what he'll do. But he will most certainly address the noble Republicans, and we'll know who he means. 610-850-0990, the number, 610-850-0990. What do you think you're going to hear the stupid old man say tonight for sure? What could you bet on? Let's start with Jenny in Newtown Square, 610-850-0990. Jenny, what do you think we're going to hear tonight?
Green energy. He's just going to keep pushing that. Now he's got a new reason to promote that even more. With the mess in Ukraine and the increased energy crisis.
I agree with you. I said earlier that I believe he is going to make Russia's invasion into Ukraine your fault for consuming so much gas.
Yep, keep that going. And don't open up our domestic sources. Don't open the pipeline. Don't give us that relief.
More importantly, I have to know, are you going to watch it? Or are you going to rely on me to do it since it's my job? I wouldn't blame you.
I can't look at the man. I can't listen to his voice.
Yeah. All right. That's all right. That's why I'm here. I'll handle it for you tomorrow. Thank you, Jenny. I appreciate it. Stay in touch. 610-850-0990. What will the stupid old man who pretends to be president, what will he say tonight? You have any predictions on specifics that he will offer up? Let's go to Patrick in Birdsboro. Patrick, do you have a prediction? What do you think we'll hear at least once tonight or maybe multiple times? We've got equity.
Look.
We've got green energy.
Look.
I think he's going to mention the noble Republicans who have resisted their party.
He's going to say, look, and I'm going to get drunk. It might have folks on the end of it.
Look, here's the deal. You think here's the deal, maybe?
Yep.
Look, I'm going to put all of those in one category. Here's the deal, and I'm jotting this down. Now, folks, yep. Do we have Dana Carvey, by the way, there, Fast Eddie? It's a good one, Patrick. Thank you.
And
sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
Double shot. Look, folks, you take a double shot. those two words are combined.
And so science matters. And all Dale's been saying, Governor Wolf, is listen to the scientists.
I do him at the town hall when he's like the gentle father to the country. And he looks like the alien who came off the spaceship in Close Encounters.
Yes.
Folks, come on, folks. Let's get real. I'm not kidding around here. You know, we got to do the thing. We did Barack. We did the deal, you know. And, my dad, you know, lost his job in Scranton. No joke. I'm not being a wise guy here. He said, Pops, why'd you lose? He said, Joe, I did. My mom said, that's the cookie. But the crumble, she says, what do it? You know, here's the deal. Number one, the thing that they said, come on. Number two, the two part. Folks, three, you know, come on. I'm not kidding around. No rocket
You know,
science.
That's another good one. He loves, one of the things he loves to do is, number one, he does a lot of lists. Number one, first of all, number two, he's always making lists. So, look, here's the deal. No joke. Number one, any machination of all of that in transition. No joke. Now, folks, here's the deal. Number one, he loves those big time. Good one, Patrick. Greg's in New Jersey. By the way, 610-850-0990, the number. What do you think we're going to hear tonight? 610-850-0990, the stupid old man we pretend is president. His first State of the Union. Greg, what do you think we'll hear?
Good morning. Without a doubt, he's going to end up probably saying a statement like, listen, folks, we're winning the war on COVID, but there's still much to be done, and he's still going to push the vaccines and wearing the masks.
He'll call for a doubling down on masks?
Well, he'll just keep up with, you know, wearing your masks, even though CDC is revising everything and the states all around are just dropping everything like it was a hot potato all of a sudden. So
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, well, hell, he got off the helicopter wearing a mask yesterday outside.
And he didn't fall.
Greg, thank you. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Felicia next in Northeast Philadelphia. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're asking for predictions on what Biden will say tonight in the State of the Union address. Felicia, what do you think he'll say? Good morning.
Well, it's more not what he... one is not what he says. It's more what he does. So I predict that there will definitely be multiple whisperings. And that means I'm going to get really drunk.
He'll lean into the microphone.
You got
and
it.
Whisper. Listen.
Yes.
I'm serious. Yes. No
and
joke.
And the second thing is, and I don't know how many times, but he will definitely refer to Kamala as president.
By accident, but he'll do it. President Kamala. Right. President Harris.
You got it.
Did you see him last week when he was announcing the new Supreme Court justice pick? When he was just before, did you happen to see that event?
I did.
Yeah, at the end of the event, he does this a lot. Like, he's called into a room to do whatever he's called to do. And if the first lady is in the room with him, have you ever noticed how when the event is about over, he always quickly jumps in and says, oh, I should also mention Dr. Biden is here too. Dr. Biden is in the room. Like, I always feel like she's going to hit him or something, right?
Dr., and I air quote that, Jill Biden has trained her puppy very well.
Yeah, seriously. I'm not so sure that woman doesn't hurt him in private. I think she might. Thank you, my friend. Was that Patricia we just talked to? Is that who that was? No.
Felicia.
Felicia. Sorry. Felicia. Thank you. Sorry, Felicia. Forgot your name for a minute. Biden.
Thank you, Alicia.
Because as we all know, elections matter. And when folks vote, they order what they want. And in this case, they got what they asked for.
What?
I went off script a little bit.
You went off script, but it wasn't good. What do you want? You want credit for saying something nonsense? What does that even mean? Folks get what they... Like, she wants credit for saying something off script. It doesn't even make sense. It's not even glib. Give me that again. What was that really profound moment? She went off script. Woo. Another moment of history there. We must continue doing what we've always done.
Elections matter. And when folks vote, they order what they want. And in this case, they got what they asked for. I went off script a little bit.
The room doesn't even know what to do with that. There's one idiot in the back. Woo!
I don't know what that means, but I'm five bourbons in. Woo!
Jackasses. What does that even mean? That's not even clever.
No.
State of the Union tonight, the stupid old man. We got to watch her. Cackle britches behind him, by the way. That's, oh, Pelosi and cackle britches sitting behind the stupid old man. How's that for a picture? Sloppy choppers, cackle britches, and a stupid old man up there. Ooh. Two of them can't keep their teeth in their head. And she's up there cackling like a hyena. We must continue to do what we've always done, and that time is now to do what we've done. I mean, that's a brain trust up there. Sloppy choppers, cackle britches, and the stupid old man. What a trifecta. Boy, Rush, you know, as Putin is on the march through Ukraine, making his way toward the Polish border, and he's going to watch that tonight. Ooh, I bet he's quaking. People of Russia, never fear. The free world's in these hands. Oh, my. Ukrainians are going to stay underground for years after this speech tonight.
Just up above north, we have Justin Trudeau, a very strong man.
Yeah. Stand with us here in North America. Trudeau, Biden, Harris, Pelosi. Wow, what Mount Rushmores of leadership. You have to laugh, folks, or you'll cry. Let's go to Carl in Warminster. Tonight's State of the Union. You have a prediction, Carl. What will we hear?
All right, Chris. The word to listen for is fundamental.
Fundamental.
He says that so often, but only after he says it twice, because he says it so often, you'll be smashed early. So I'm saying,
he does like to say words twice for effect. Twice for effect.
Well, yeah, I mean, just if he says it in one sentence and then don't take the shot yet. Wait till he says it again, then do it. But then you have to restart the counter to zero after he says it twice. Otherwise, you'll be smashed too early.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. It's your fundamental right. Fundamental. He loves to do it twice. I think that it's a rhetorical trick to get his brain to recalibrate.
Yes.
Anytime somebody repeats something twice and pauses, that's their way of trying to recenter either the words in their head or recalibrate on their script. It's their fundamental right. Fundamental. Pause, beat, crap. Where was I? Okay, next sentence. Going on in their head. That's the inner monologue. Dave's in Lancaster. Dave, what do you say? Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. I'm not going to be drinking for anything he says, but I'm going to take a shot every time he touches his face.
Touches his face.
You got to chug your drink if he picks his teeth and eats it.
He does pick his teeth a lot, which is weird, but that's normally when he's just sitting about not doing anything. You're right, though. He does like to touch his face. He coughs a lot, too. I bet he'll give him one of those in the fist. Just right in the microphone. He's never aware of a microphone when he does that. Old man cough. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. 610-850-0990. In Havertown, it's Emily. Good morning, Emily.
Chris, love you. You're the best.
Mwah. Thank you. What are you watching for tonight?
I'm thinking he's going to say, excuse me. You know how he always messes up and then he goes, excuse me, and then he wipes his mouth and his nose.
Excuse me. Oh, you know what? Here's another variation of that. He will try a moment where he'll go a little bit off script, and then he'll say, I shouldn't say that. Sorry, folks. I shouldn't. Never mind. I'm not going to say that. He interrupts himself to make it sound like he's about to say something really edgy and then pulls it back.
Yeah. I don't think anybody stands a chance of being sober tonight.
I think we're covering it all pretty well, Emily. Thank you. Great call. 610-850-0990. tonight's State of the Union. What are we going to hear in Deptford? It's Paul next. Paul, what do you think?
Hey, good morning, Chris. I think he's going to talk about the disenfranchising of voters, but he's going to do it in that creepy whisper.
we do have the creepy whisper as an entry, but you think specifically when he whispers, he'll talk about what again?
About the disenfranchising of the voters with all the laws coming back into effect that should have been there in 2020 but weren't.
That's right. We will, of course, we're going to get a nod to January 6th, right, and how dangerous and precarious democracy is and how Republican governors across the country are keeping people from voting, right? That's what you mean?
Yeah, and he'll also talk about the gerrymandering in the Republican states, but nothing in the Democratic states.
Like Pennsylvania, where the Supreme Court's hijacking it as though that's constitutional, right?
Correct. And even Florida is having a problem with their Republican legislature, given the Dems an extra seat or two, or trying to keep one guy in there for good, a Democrat.
Yep.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Great call. Thank you, Paul. I think it's a good bet. So here's the running list so far. 610-850-0990. Equity, certainly Green Energy. I believe he'll probably reference the noble, brave Republicans. He may or may not. I tell you what, bonus shot if he references them by name, Kinzinger or Cheney. I don't know if he will state their names, but he will talk about a break with the Republican Party and the brave Republicans who've stood up to their party and the insurrectionists. Look, here's the deal. No joke. Number one, number two. He loves doing those. Any of those, any combo of those. Much work to be done on masks, vaccinations. Something about, you know, the dark winter is not over yet. Do you think he declares victory over COVID or says there's still much work to be done and you should still be very afraid? Which play here? He needs something to tout tonight. Remember, he's going to talk a lot about how much money he spent and how he saved the economy from ruin by making sure all that money was spent. Infrastructure. So that's for sure. But does he want COVID to celebrate as being over, or is he going to say, oh, it's still a lot of heavy lifting and it's scary out there?
He's going to give himself coverage. So he's going to give himself the layup, what you call a layup in golf. Now, the science is always changing, so this could change. But right now, we are at a moment we are past COVID.
Ooh, you think he will declare victory? All right. We think he'll whisper. He'll lean in. Lean in. Here's the deal. Serious, folks. It's a bargain. Do you think he'll do fake angry old man?
The State of the Union, no.
You don't think he'll pound the fist and do the fake yell where, you know, they write in parentheses, yell here for emphasis? You ever seen him do the weird thing where he gets inappropriately angry and pounds and yells in a speech? Fundamental. Fundamental. He'll say that word twice. He'll touch his face. Excuse me. He'll. I think he'll hack or cough in his fist, probably. Yeah. He'll bring up the disenfranchisement of the voter, gerrymandering, the anti-voter rules, the bigoted anti-voter rules across the country in Republican states. 610-850-0990. In Perry, it's Andrea. Andrea, what do you think we'll hear tonight?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so grateful you listen.
Yeah, I think he's going to say the phrase, let's be clear.
Let's be clear. Yeah, Obama loved to say, let me be clear. You think he'll also say, let's be clear. All right, let's
I think he'll say, let's be clear, and then muddle through something that doesn't make any sense.
Will you actually watch this, be honest?
Absolutely not.
All right. You're all putting it on me. I get it. That's what I'm paid to do. I'll handle it. Don't sweat it. I'll be with you tomorrow and tell you all about it. Thank you, Andrea. Have a great day. She's in Perry Hall, Maryland, by the way. My apologies on that. Perry Hall, Maryland. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Sam in Willow Grove. Sam, what's on your mind this morning? What do you think we'll hear tonight?
Hey, Chris. Chris, great show. And listen, first, you know, I was looking for a voice of sanity about a year ago on the radio, and I stumbled on you guys and listened since all your shows. And you guys still have.
Wow.
Anyway.
What an honor. Thank you, Sam. Sincerely,
yeah,
I appreciate it.
I'm really happy I stumbled on your station. And I love listening every day. But honestly, he's going to have absolutely nothing useful to say tonight. And honestly, I think nobody should watch and send a message. Let it have the lowest State of the Union ratings of all time and send him a damn message. He needs one.
All right, Sam. That's not a. You know what? I think that's a safe prediction unto itself. Low ratings. I'm going to write that down as it will be a low rated affair, much like the Olympics. Nobody watching it. Like I said, I'll handle it. We're working on. But incidentally, Dr. Oz, running for Pennsylvania Senate as a Republican, Dr. Oz will be with us at 8:30. We're also scheduled to talk with Steve Moore coming up. Just wanted you to know that. So don't go anywhere. Those of you that have been eager to hear from Dr. Oz, this will be our first conversation. Hope it won't be our last. A heated Pennsylvania primary. I'll get his take on what he thinks we might hear tonight, too.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
We'll do one quick. Mark and Ambler. Mark, State of the Union tonight. What do you think we're going to hear?
Good morning, Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
Yes. So I have a word that he's not going to use, and that would be Constitution. I doubt he'll use that word.
We will not hear Constitution. So you lose if he invokes the word Constitution. All right. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it, Mark. 610-850-0990 is the telephone number. Coming up in this next hour, don't go away, our pal Steve Moore for our weekly conversation, Where's the Price of Oil Headed? What's He Say? And Dr. Oz.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
I wanted to tell you that I really like your show.
Hi, Chris. A huge fan of you and Fast Steady.
Good morning, Chris. Great show as usual.
A big fan. I listen every day.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Philadelphia's vaccine mandate for city workers has once again been delayed. Well, they've lifted the vaccine mandate in Philadelphia, haven't they? You don't have to show your papas anymore to go have a steak at Del Frisco's?
No, just in Northern Liberties.
Yeah, if you're going to a skinny jeans hipster place, they still want you to show your papers.
Yeah.
And wear 5-6 dozen masks.
Correct.
The masks are still in effect.
Yeah, they are. Uh-huh.
Just you don't have to show your papas anymore. Philadelphia's long-delayed vaccine mandate for 24,000 unionized city workers, set to take effect yesterday, has been paused indefinitely by an arbitration panel. You know, that's one of the things, as Grandpa tonight talks about our democracy and authoritarianism. Have we seen ever, and I'm saying since I've been alive or you've been alive, and I don't care if you're 30 or if you're 90, have you ever seen, and could you ever have imagined, a United States president trying to mandate as a condition of your employment that you take a medicine you may or may not want? You can stick your authoritarianism where the sun don't shine, Gramps. Don't start with authoritarians. And you Democrats who love to talk about Trump and goons and January 6th and overthrowing our democracy, never forget that this senile old fart that we're supposed to pretend is leading something tried to inject every man, woman, and child with a medicine they may or may not want as a condition of their wage earning. Don't talk to me about authoritarianism, ever. Steve Moore is our chief economist. He's over there at FreedomWorks, and we're always grateful for his take on the issues of the day, primarily gas prices. That's one that everybody's watching. They're saying oil could go to $150 a barrel, Steve-O. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. By the way, the speech tonight, I think that Biden, I'm going to make a prediction, I think Biden will actually call for the suspension of all the rules, all the mandates, all of the, I mean, COVID is basically through. At least this wave, so there's nothing to worry about right now. And if he were smart, and I think he's going to do this, he's going to get a big ovation for saying, you know, the very mandates that he imposed that had so little effect on health outcomes, I think he's going to call for an end of them. And you know, we have to look back now in 2 years and say, what actually did the government get right here? I mean, the mask mandates had very, very little effect on health outcomes. We know from the states that states like Florida that stayed open and didn't have all these lockdowns had just as good health outcomes as states that like Pennsylvania that shut things down. Even the vaccine mandates, you know, I'm with you on this. I mean, let people make their own decisions. I think that's kind of the lesson here. We don't need the government to command us what to do. But he's got a big problem tonight because you're right. Gas prices, we don't know. It's hard to predict, by the way, what's going to happen with gas prices because so much depends on what happens in Ukraine and whether that flow of oil continues out of Russia. And how pathetic is it, by the way, Chris, that we have to depend, you know, on Russia for oil?
Yes.
I mean, this is something you just can't make up. I mean, here's the U.S. of A. You're there in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has an enormous amount of oil and gas. West Virginia does, Texas, North Dakota, you know, Oklahoma, Alaska. And we're not producing it here at home. So we have to be reliant on countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia and Iran. I mean, somebody explain the logic of that one to me.
Let me ask you this question about sanctions, because it's, you know, just as a mathematical economics matter, I'm not sophisticated enough to totally get it, but maybe you can help us understand. When we talk about sanctioning Russia, and specifically when we call for let's hit them hard where they live and let's hit their energy, right? It's a bit like turning around a battleship. I mean, I think there's sort of this attitude that we would flip a switch, sanction Russia, start producing our own energy. It wouldn't happen in the offing in the immediate. I think most of us support the concept. But the truth of the matter is, right, if we did that right away, true, our gas prices would increase. I think most Americans, it were properly explained, would weather it. But that would happen, right?
Yes. And so that's you've really put your finger on it. That's the dilemma we face right now. Are we going to be really punitive to Russia for their outrageous invasion of Ukraine, or are we going to try to keep gas prices as low as possible? Because we put ourselves into this predicament, Chris. We never had to be in this situation. When Trump left office, I said this last week, I'll say it again, 13 months ago when Trump left office, we were actually exporting oil, not importing it. Biden comes in, I'm climate change. We're going to change the temperature of the planet. We're going to stop producing oil and gas in the United States. It doesn't make any sense. And incidentally, I think the big loser in this whole last year has been the climate change fanatics. The Democrats have this climate change issue has become a complete albatross around the neck of the Democrats. They're so obsessed with this issue that they refuse to do things that are good for America and good for energy independence. It's to somehow change the, and incidentally, you know, I know that some of your listeners care about climate change, but the point is we're not going to reduce the temperature of the planet by producing less oil in the United States. All we're doing is reducing our production, and all these other countries are increasing their production. So we're just making our trade deficit, and we're sending our jobs to these other countries. So you're right. We need to start immediately. I mean, if I were Biden, if I were given that speech tonight, And I were advising the president on how to, one of the things I'd say is, look, just admit that you were wrong on the Keystone XL pipeline and just say, you know, the world has changed. We have a dangerous world right now. And to make America more secure here at home, we're going to start producing more oil, more gas. We're going to allow LNG terminals. We're going to build pipelines. Just last week, Chris, the Biden energy regulators basically made it impossible to build a new LNG terminal in this country. You need LNG terminals, folks, so that we can liquefy the natural gas, which we have a super abundance of, as you know, there in Pennsylvania. And then we put it on tankers, and we can send that that liquefied gas to Europe so they're not dependent on Russia.
Yes. The ABC News Washington Post poll just released. The Hill's got this story. Biden approval near record low. 37% of adults strongly or somewhat approve of Biden's job performance. 55% strongly disapprove or somewhat disapprove, specifically on the economy. 54% of respondents say they trust Republicans to do a better job handling the economy. 35% say the same of Democrats. 7% say they trust neither. And on the economy specifically, the state of the economy, only 3% of respondents say it's in excellent condition currently. 21% say it's good, but 36% say it's not so good. Another 39% say poor. So overwhelmingly, not good or poor is almost 80% of respondents. That's not good for a president that's supposed to give a State of the Union tonight.
No, it's a tough speech tonight he has to give. And, you know, it's hard to really find anything that's going right in the country right now. I mean, the border is out of control. Crime is way up in major cities. You've got budget deficits and debt that are higher than ever before in American history. You've got gas prices going through the roof. You've got, you know, this foreign policy issue with America looking weak. Look, I'm not suggesting, by the way, Republicans are saints. I don't think the Republicans, they have to share some of the blame here for this debt. I mean, the Republicans have voted for a lot of this spending, Chris. So I'm not saying Republicans are blameless by any means. But
here's what he will say. Steve-O, he will say tonight, he will take credit for that spending. He loves to take credit for that trillions of dollars in spending and infrastructure. Yeah. He'll talk about that tonight.
He's going to say, we passed this infrastructure bill. But folks, we do need an infrastructure bill, but not this one. This one basically is all green energy crap. There's no pipeline funding in this bill. There's no funding for LNG terminals. There's very little, only 10 or 15% of it is for roads and bridges and fixing potholes. It's for, you know, a new green energy infrastructure, which isn't going to work. So subways, you know, more and more money. We spent more money, folks. You can't believe this, than the last year subsidizing the New York subway system than we did developing treatments for COVID.
Jeez. Gas spikes. How high will the price go at the pump after the Russian invasion? Do you have a sense of it? Now, I've got this CNET headline in front of me. And I've got an Inquirer story, too. Utility bills are soaring in the Philadelphia region, and so is customer outrage. It's a lengthy profile piece from the weekend about how upset people are the utility bills are going through the roof.
Well, I think my wife must have been one of the people they interviewed, because she had smoke coming out of yours the other day when we got our home heating bill, and it was $600. And, you know, we used to pay about $300, so it back to almost doubled. I can't predict, you know, what's going to, you know, by the way, I wish I could predict what's going to happen to oil and gas prices, because, you know, if you can predict that, you can make a lot of money. These numbers fluctuate all the time. It really, and by the way, I just have to say this. I mean, God bless the Ukrainians. They are putting up, Chris, one hell of a fight. And, you know, they're fighting these Russian tanks and Russian, the Russian militia, they're fighting them, you know, every street corner. And it is fantastic. They're out. Obviously, they don't have the military arsenal that Putin has. And incidentally, you know, the only thing that where does Biden think that Putin's getting the money to do this? He's getting because they're making so much money on oil. And
when
then why don't we produce more oil here? Every time we produce a barrel of oil in the United States, it's less money that goes to Russia.
I saw footage, Steve Moore, yesterday of people standing in long, long lines in Russia, in Moscow, waiting at their bank. Like, I guess, I don't know if you'd call it a full-blown run on the bank, but their economy is obviously wobbly, and they're being hit with more sanctions. The global community has to think what? I mean, if you really went headlong and really crippled Russia's economy, and really broke it, it does have ramifications. I know we sort of cheer that, but it does mean something to the rest of us if they're completely taken out economically, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the ruble is crashing. So, you know, I feel sorry for the citizens of Russia that you know, they have a tyrant. Look, this is a bad guy. I mean, this is a guy who's ex-KGB. He's a former Soviet Union KGB agent, who is probably responsible for thousands, if not tens of thousands, of deaths. So he's a murderous tyrant, and he's running this country, and he's running it into the ground. And by the way, he owns a huge amount of the oil field, so he's becoming the richest guy in the world. We've got to take him out. I mean, he is doing great damage to the tens and tens of millions of Russians. There are protests in the streets in Russia right now, except that you can't do that. You know, they don't have any First Amendment rights in Russia, right? So
they're being rounded up and arrested.
I wouldn't want to be in Moscow right now.
So our market is tanking. I mean, stocks, our stock market, our portfolios are really taking a wallop during this period. What does that mean, I guess, short-term, long-term? How long might one expect that we see markets in the red? Or can you even guess?
Gosh, you're asking tough questions this morning. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the market. I did think that it was overpriced. You know, I think there was an irrational exuberance with the stock market. But, you know, look, if Putin laid down his arms today, said, hey, we're getting out of Ukraine, then I think you'd see a big rally. So a lot depends on how Biden deals with this crisis. But I'll say it again. He put down, remember when he gave his speech last, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday, when he said, these are the most severe sanctions ever. No, they're not. They're not. Yeah. I mean, I applaud the sanctions he's put in place. But if you want to get tough with Russia and you want to bring an end to this war, then you go after them where it hurts. And that's by suspending their oil exports. But that's also going to mean, Chris, that we're going to pay more for gasoline here at home. So that's the trade-off.
Steve Moore is our chief economist, and we check in with him every week. We so appreciate your perspective, as always, my friend. Thank you.
Okay, Chris, have a great week. Take care.
You do the same. That's Steve Moore. The telephone number, 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. Coming up, I have this internal memo, and I did not share this with you yesterday. I referenced it, but I want to read some of it for you very specifically. Why tonight, Steve may be right, the prediction that Biden rolls out. I'm of two minds about it. I could see it going either way. Biden either declares victory over COVID, or he warns, there's still much to be done and much to still fear. Fear has been a hell of a drug for the Democrat Party. But this guy is in such desperate need for any kind of win. Is it bad enough he's willing to shelve the fear to take the win over COVID? Democrats internally seem to be discussing take the win and move on. I'll share with you this internal memo next on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
But I'm the million-dollar man. And you will be bought. You better call me a doctor.
Very nice bump music there, Fast Eddie. We welcome in Republican Senate candidate in Pennsylvania. And I think most notably, he's probably not unhappy with being most known for his wildly successful syndicated television show, Dr. Oz. It's Mehmet Oz. He's running for Senate as a Republican in the primary here in Pennsylvania. And Dr. Oz, it's our first visit. I hope it won't be our last. Welcome to the show, sir.
Chris, I enjoy what you do. I'm looking forward to many more visits.
Thank you so much. I know you were down there at CPAC. You had a speaking role. I was down there, too. We weren't able to connect because it was so kind of loud and busy. But what was your read on that event? That was probably your first one, I would guess.
It is my first one. I'll tell you, I'm passion. Folks are energized. And, you know, you'd think that a lot of Republicans would be in a down mood because, you know, we don't have a lot of control. However, it galvanizes conservatives like us because we see, my goodness, there's obvious things we need to do. The country's not doing it. And this is part of the broader rubric of why I got in the race. You know, Washington's getting it wrong literally at every juncture. So at some point you start saying, I mean, how can they get it wrong every time? And it's because they don't share our values, Chris. They don't respect our values. I'm in Warren County right now, the western part of the state. You ask these people what they think of Washington, and they feel disrespected. And people who are disrespected get angry.
I got an internal memo, doctor, that it's pretty fascinating. Impact Research Group. It's a Democrat hired research group, and it's a memo, an internal memo that was leaked over the weekend. I don't have time to read it all with you, but just generally speaking, it says below we lay out some strategic thoughts for Democrats positioning themselves on COVID-19 after nearly 2 years of the pandemic. And here are the highlights. I'm going to read 5 bullet points and just get your response. They say we as Democrats should declare the crisis phase of COVID over and push for feeling and acting more normal. We should recognize people are worn out and feeling real harm after the years long restrictions and, quote, take their side. We should acknowledge COVID still exists and likely will for a long time. We shouldn't set COVID zero as the victory condition, and we should stop talking about restrictions and the unknown future ahead. That's pretty fascinating for a party that has run on lockdowns and mandates and restrictions for two solid years. Now they're going to try to make a heel turn? You think they're going to get away with it?
Of course not. That is literally what Republicans have been saying the entire time after, let's say, May of 2020. You know, listen, I understand the first month or two of the pandemic. We were unprepared, didn't know what we were dealing with. You know, let's forgive all that. But once we got to May and we saw the first shifts in caseloads, everybody who, I believe, carefully studied the information, who had a bit of a conservative bent on life, felt those 5 points exactly. The question we have to ask ourselves is, why did it take the Democrats 2 years to turn around? And I'll tell you why. Because they are not following the science. They're following the political science. They scared their base so much that they were unwilling to attempt to try anything different for fear that their base would reject them. And we as Republicans say, guys, our primary value is to protect our children, is to make sure we rise up from any obstacles that come in our way. That's what we do in our personal lives. Let's do that as a nation. And I'll say one word, because it's a big difference here, brave. And I played football in college, Chris. The last word of the national anthem was brave. I'd wait for that word because I could run out in the field and, you know, get out the jitters. And I always wondered why it was the last word. And I believe that we must be brave. If we are not, we will not be free. And because the Democrats weren't brave in the face of this, they weren't free. Even today, you see people driving around in their cars with masks on by themselves. I mean, you've been brainwashed to think a certain way. After 2 years, you can't just turn it off.
Dr. Mehmet Oz is with us. He's running for Senate as a Republican here in Pennsylvania. You're a very famous guy, and you're very, very well known, and you have a lot of celebrity friends. And I would guess a lot of those celebrity friends have absolutely nothing to do with the Republican Party. And I kind of wonder, of your friends who lean to the left or vote for Democrats, have they responded to your decision to run as a Republican? And if so, how has that been met? How do you explain it to people why you're running as a Republican?
Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure. There are a lot more patriots out there than you think. Even though many in the entertainment business are lean left, there are a lot who lean right who don't say anything because they know they'll be canceled if they do, and they're trying to preserve their livelihoods. So when I announced I was running, quite a few reached out and said, listen, you know, we can't say anything publicly, but thank you, thank you, thank you for standing up and saying things that need to be said. And I think at a high level, that's the primary motivation for my campaign. Just get everyone to say what they see. And this is, I'm talking now to everybody who's listening to your show, because I live in Southeast Philly, Southeast Pennsylvania, so I'm in Montgomery County. We all listen to you. Many people driving to work right now are going to get to work, see something they know is wrong, and won't say anything for fear of getting silenced, othered, shuttered, et cetera. And we all need to just calmly, not abrasively or arrogantly, sort of the way you speak, Chris, just assertively say, guys, my values are different. Here's what I think we should do in the situation. And people will rally to you. And that's what I've seen happen. Now, there are some who weren't happy. And everyone listening now is friends whose values they don't share. And that's okay. You know, we can do things.
Have you lost, may I candidly ask you, if you don't mind, have you lost friends or relationships over your decision to run as a Republican?
Of course I have. People have written harsh notes, say this is irresponsible, reprehensible. Listen, one thing I'll give you a good example. I challenged Dr. Fauci to a debate. And I did that because I really think he's not served our nation wisely. I believe that he said things that are not based on science. In fact, when he says, I believe in science, I say, no, I believe in God. Science is something we use as a tool. I'm a man of science. I'm a doctor. I'm a heart surgeon. But I understand its role, and I understand the role of faith and other realities. And I also don't silence people who disagree with me like he did. Some people reached out to me in the medical community and said, you shouldn't be challenging a doctor. He did his best. That all the usual things you'll say to excuse away failure. But if he was working in middle management for a large company, and he is in middle management, he's an unelected bureaucrat who's supposed to do things that are, you know, that the nation benefits from, that he has expertise in, but he's not supposed to be our political leader. And he morphed into that in some ways in the medical field. And with incredible power and manipulation, he changed the narratives on these. So I went after him. Some people didn't like that. But I'll do whatever it takes to protect my nation.
I say this with respect, Doctor, only because I try to deliver on behalf of the audience, and members of the audience, questions that I think they'd ask you if they were here. And one of the things that I know, there are a number of people in this audience, and I know you've heard it, that remain skeptical of your let's call it roots in Pennsylvania, that you're a carpetbagger, that you parachuted into Pennsylvania because you got a lot of money and name ID. You're going to try to, quote, buy this Senate seat. I know you've heard those allegations and those charges. How do you answer them?
Well, first of all, if that's the worst they can say about me, I'm in good shape. And people, and there's no question about this, they care. You know, we do these huge town halls across the state. I was in Bucks County actually last weekend. We had about 325 people. They asked that very question. And I pushed back. I said, you guys, I think I can speak to this now, having answered the question. People just care much more about what I stand for than where I'm from. However, all that stated, I grew up less than 10 miles from Kennett Square, where, you know, the mushroom capital of the world. My dad would always tell me, don't be a mushroom. You know, don't sit in the dark all day long and be fed manure, which is what so many of us did during COVID. I went to medical school at Penn, business school at Wharton, and I did the best thing of my whole life, which is to meet and marry my wife, Lisa, in Brunathen, which is in Montgomery County. This is actually married in the house that we live in right now. And we have spent our whole life coming back and forth to my in-laws' horse farm where they live, again, in Montgomery County. And that's where we live now, and I'm proud of it. And we moved back a couple years ago. People can throw those allegations out there. They're meritless. The lens I look on life with was honed in Pennsylvania.
What is your relationship, if any, with President Trump?
It's quite close, and I defend him because I think he did a great job. I had him on my show before the 2016 election when no one else would, because I believed he deserved to share his story on network television with the average person who's watching network television, which is everybody, right? And instead of being, you know, pitched on, I just let him talk and articulate. At the time, there was a big debate about his medical records. He presented them on my show. I got more hate mail for that show than I did running for Senate. People just could not believe that I would give him a platform. I think it was the right and appropriate thing to do for a man who sacrificed everything in order to run for office. And I've stayed close with him. He appointed me to his presidential council for sports, fitness, and nutrition. I speak to him, I mean, frequently. And I find him to be a sage offered by his talk at CPAC was spectacular. And
do you anticipate he'll endorse?
I'm not sure. We have a close relationship. I could see him endorsing me, but that's his choice, and he's got to make it. And I've got to, you know, and we've had this candor discussion. I've got to be an out of the box outsider candidate because that's who I am, and you've got to be truthful to who you are. I think he respects that. He was that. So when he, you know, weighs all the options and looks at the field and identifies the person that he feels will best serve our nation, then he'll make a choice. Or he may sit on the sideline. It's, you know, you can't read the president's mind. I wouldn't trust you anyway.
How do you define the events of January 6th? You know you're running to replace a senator who voted ultimately to impeach Donald Trump. Do you agree with that decision? And how do you define and explain the events of January 6th?
I don't agree with that decision to impeach the president. I think it was a witch hunt. It did not help our nation. January 6th, listen, I'm a law and order Republican. Like I am, by the way, dealing with crime issues in our beautiful city that have been devastating. People who broke the law should appropriately, rapidly, in a quickly adjudicated fashion, be dealt with. People who did not break the law should be immediately released and allowed to go back to their lives.
Was it an insurrection?
I don't believe it was an insurrection. I believe it was individuals coming from different places. I mean, the last words said from the president that I'm aware of was, you know, go in peace. So I think some folks broke the law and they need to be dealt with. And effectively, we don't want people doing that. But there were innocent people as well. And again, I'm not, you know, in the law and order system looking at these individual cases. But it undermines all of our confidence if they're not dealt with in a rapid, effective fashion.
Dr. Mehmet Oz is with us. He's running as a Republican in the Senate race here in Pennsylvania. Mitch McConnell has called it an insurrection. Liz Cheney, we know. Adam Kinzinger. What do you think of Mitch McConnell and current Republican leadership? Would you support Mitch McConnell if you became the next senator from Pennsylvania?
If I'm allowed to serve the citizens of Pennsylvania, I look forward to voting in the next time that we have a majority leader, because I hope they'll be part of the majority. And at that point, I'll be able to decide who the best person to serve the Senate is.
Do you think Mitch McConnell is that guy right now, or would we be best served to change course with new leadership?
You know, I really don't know. I think there are things he's done that are wonderful. There are things I disagree with, but I don't think the Senate should be compromised. We should be allowed to make our decisions at the time when we deal with the opportunities that present themselves.
How do you read the election in 2020 here in Pennsylvania, Dr. Oz? What happened in Pennsylvania? Did Joe Biden legitimately win Pennsylvania, in your view? Was there fraud, meaningful fraud, or no?
Oh, there was definitely fraud. And I travel around the state, and people always take an opportunity to come up and tell me these horror stories of things that happen. And there's fraud in every election. Chris, the real issue is, you know, as we look at this fraud, how much of it was caused by decisions made by us? Did we give rise to the opportunity for fraud? And I think we did. And Act 77 is a good example, gave absentee ballots to people who didn't even know they were getting them. And under the cover of COVID, there were numerous other changes made to the voting process that invited mischievousness. And under those rules, it was very difficult to tell what the heck was going on. And that's the most frustrating thing to the people who I hear continuously. And they voice it because they felt that they didn't have a chance to have their vote count equally to every other. So, I mean, frankly, Chris, how is it possible that in our beautiful Commonwealth, we don't have voter ID? And we can't even get voter ID before I would go to the polls to be voted for or against in November of this year. I mean, it's beyond belief. The earliest we can get voter ID in Pennsylvania is next summer of 2023. So this is kind of stuff that sort of really frustrates you. And this, I think, is frustrating to Democrats and Republicans. 85% of people polled think we should have voter ID. You got to show an ID to get into a restaurant in Philadelphia. This doesn't make any sense at all.
Do you believe Joe Biden legitimately won Pennsylvania?
Yeah, he's the president, right? And there's nothing you can say about that except look at the results of what happened. And I think that we spend a lot of time trying to figure out subtleties around it. But the man has been a disaster. And he is the president now. He's going to continue to be the president for the next 3 years. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say tonight in his State of the Union address. But everywhere I look, I see a man who's making decisions that are, I believe, designed by the far left elements of his party. He has not lived up to the promises he made to us, which was that he would be a middle of the road individual. And my goodness, I go up to Scranton to visit people from his old stomping grounds where he was raised. They're in disbelief. They cannot believe this is happening.
Do you? I know, for instance, I know you know that Josh Hawley, the Missouri senator, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, they became lightning rods on January 6th because they opposed the certification of the election. If you were the senator from Pennsylvania in that same situation, would you have supported certifying the election, or would you have stood with people like Cruz and Hawley, do you imagine?
Again, I'm a law and order Republican. By the time the states had done their job and delivered their results to the Senate, the job of the Senate is to certify. So, yes, I would have certified.
Okay. Let me ask you on the question of abortion. This is one that gets brought up a lot, and the videos of your answers on this subject in the past have been circulating around. So just definitively, can you describe for me your position on the issue of life and abortion?
Actually, I encourage people to look at those videos because it's going to reaffirm what I'm saying right now. I am strongly pro-life. I believe life starts at conception. I'm a heart surgeon, Chris. I've operated. In fact, I just saw a little kid in Pittsburgh who I had taken care of. He's 5 days of age. And at the five-day-old mark, you see this brilliant little tiny muscle that's twittering in there, the heart. Pumping blood is an absolute miracle. You hold it in your fingertips just to make sure that you can appropriately repair it. I could never imagine hurting that. You couldn't either. If you've seen what I see, you could never harm human life. Imagine going back 6 months when it's that much smaller, that much more magical in its essence. I don't believe that abortion, if people really understood what it meant, would be as widely used as it is now. So I'm strongly pro-life. My whole family has been. My mother-in-law, who was an elected official in Montgomery County, wrote a lot of the pamphlets that were used around the pro-life movement early on. She's an ordained minister. And that the videos you see have me in a big room with every single person pro-choice. And I put my hand up and I say, guys, I'm sorry. You may think pro-life people are knuckle-dragging Neanderthals, but I'm pro-life, and here's why.
And if the Supreme Court ultimately rules to gut what would be Roe versus Wade as we know it, which is considered sort of the established abortion law of the land, if this current Supreme Court undoes that, you would support that?
Very much so, because I support constitutional lawyers and judges. I want them to actually use the Constitution, this miraculous document that's 250 years of thin paper that's protected our nation. I want them to use that as their guiding tool, not to legislate from the bench.
Joe Biden has just nominated a new Supreme Court justice, and he said he was very specifically choosing a black woman. He ultimately picked Ketanji Brown Jackson. If you were a United States senator voting to confirm this judge for the next Supreme Court justice position, would you support her?
I have major concerns about her history. They're very activist. Again, I am a constitutionalist. I very strongly desire us to follow that document because I know how easily you can pervert a piece of paper. I'm unconvinced that she would follow that document.
So is that a definitive no, or you would wait to see whether you would vote to confirm her?
Oh, no, I'd wait to see. We allow our senators to serve us so they can actually do the hard, heavy lifting that some of us don't have time to do because we've got day jobs. So I want to see everything she has to say here. Look, she deserves her day in the Senate, probably more than one, to articulate her views and for her to be challenged. Let's see how she deals with the pressure of being asked about her legislative history.
I don't think most of us as conservatives, Dr. Oz, fault anybody who's been successful in life, and you certainly have. I personally don't ever like to fault anybody for making great successes of their lives or being wealthy. But naturally, people with wealth, I think, elicit some healthy skepticism when they want to get into public life. People wonder if it's an exercise in enrichment. And so I wonder what you think about wealthy people or those who become very wealthy while in public service in Congress. Are there ways we should better manage and watch those things? For instance, Nancy Pelosi says she doesn't think there should be limits or governing over how people publicly financially deal while serving. What do you say about that?
Well, in my own personal case, I had intended to put the money that I have into a trust so that I could not be conflicted by it. I share the skepticism of many listeners right now and say, listen, you made a lot of money. Did you make it legitimately? If it wasn't legitimate, well, could you do it even done, in spades if you're actually serving in the Senate where you have even that much more clout? Very legitimate. We also don't want to make rules that make it very difficult for people in general to be able to serve our nation. We want the best people out there to want to volunteer. Believe me, the big money that I spent more than $10 million of my own money just to get the campaign up and running. I've raised a lot of money from voters, and more than 10,000 people have given us money. So it's a grassroots effort. That stated, the real money I gave up wasn't that. It's my job. I mean, my day job was lucrative. And when you sacrifice your day job, you've made the biggest sacrifice of all, because that was your future. That was what you would have done if you hadn't decided to shift over and try to serve our nation. So we don't want to make that a challenge that people like me can deal with it because I've got enough money. But there are a lot of people who are not that wealthy who want to serve, and if they don't have any ability to protect their assets, they leave. And that is the reason some people leave the Senate and even the House. They just can't keep up with the finances, and we don't want to make that difficult. I mean, the money
you
get paid as a senator, I'm going to donate. Yeah. For example, I'm not going to keep that money.
You wouldn't support any limits on your public trading or your private transactions while you hold a Senate seat?
No, I'd be okay with that. I think there should be reasonable ones. I mean, for example, if you put it into a trust and let someone who's savvy about money trade for you outside of your purvey, you don't control it. They do it outside of you. I think that would be fine. Frankly, that might be safer for a lot of people because they're probably not as good as investing as a professional would be. But we don't want to just freeze their accounts and not let them do what a normal person who has your best interest in mind would do.
You're running against a crowded field, and there are three of you in particular who are millionaires. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. But the three of you share one thing in common, and that is you have lived out of state. You're back in state, and you're very successful. I don't necessarily think that should be disqualifying, but you understand that there are a number of people in this audience who are watching, particularly the three of you, with raised eyebrows. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. So how might you connect with folks like that you're a wealthy celebrity that they feel hasn't spent the most, the better part of your life right here in the Commonwealth with them? You know what I'm saying? It's a connection issue that I'm just asking you to address generally. I don't mean to be personal about it, but I think that's a real issue. I think you know that.
I do, Chris. You're very fair in your questions. I mean, these are pointed questions. We should be able to answer these as candidates. I chose to come back home. I could have stayed. We were living in New Jersey because I could come home on the weekends because that's where family, we're a close family. We all come back to Huntington Valley. Huntington Valley is in Montgomery County frequently, but I had to go into the city because I was doing heart transplants early on. And the biggest heart transplanter center in the country was at Columbia, where I'm a professor. I also was making my show in a big studio in Manhattan. That's where all the guests are. So I had to commute into the city on the weekdays and come back home on the weekends. I chose to come home to run. And I think Pennsylvanians should feel proud about that. All three of us could have stayed where we were. Dave McCormick was in Connecticut. Carla was in California. I mean, we could have stayed in those states. They're nice states too, but we chose to come back to a place that we love and adore
and actually stopped everything else we're doing in our lives to come back to try to serve. You should pick the best person you think can actually address the needs of our Commonwealth. And the reason I argue, and by the way, none of us have served in public office. All of us were called to engage in this because we are worried about our nation. So you should pick the person that can speak most boldly, most articulately on the major issues that challenge our Commonwealth, but also the nation. The reason I think I'm that person is I fought on the biggest stage across the board. I've gone to battle with big tech, with Facebook. Right? I went to battle with Fauci. I went to battle with pharma. I've gone after China. I mean, I've done things that are difficult to do in any walk of life, and I've risked everything to do them because I felt so passionately about defending the people who trusted me, who are my viewers. They're now my voters. I'll do the exact same. I have that track record. That's not the track record, and I'll just point this out specifically because there's so many attack ads on me by Dave McCormick. That's not his track record. You know, he opened the largest hedge fund ever by a U.S. company in China, $1.3 billion to help build their infrastructure, and finished raising the money, I guess, the end of last year, and now he's running to protect us. It's like, you can't shift that quickly.
There are a number of folks who also I've heard the China charges directed at both you and McCormick specifically, that you've made money, however that is, and I won't get into the weeds about it, but that you both have benefited from Chinese investment, Chinese manufacturing, Chinese products being sold.
Chris, I have a television show that I make in America that's licensed to be shown in China. We have sponsors of that show. Like most advertisers have to be involved. You have an advertiser. If you're advertising, so those advertisers do things. That's very, very different from helping build a financial infrastructure to a country. And $1.3 billion is a lot more than $1 million. So, you know, these are numbers that are even close. It's completely and purposefully obfuscating to compare those. There's zero alliance. Plus, I went to battle with the U.S. government over what they were doing protecting Chinese apple growers. And why? Because our government stopped us from using arsenic in apples because they didn't want to have that poison in our food supply, yet they allowed Chinese farmers to use arsenic within their apples as a pesticide. And then large multinational companies bought those Chinese apples, put them in juice, and shipped them for our kids to drink. And I risked everything to go after them. This is, you know, 7-8 years ago, got harshly criticized by the government, who then later on, they all have to apologize. They use media just the way Fauci did, by the way, to try to attack you from any sides to make you seem like a horrible human being. They ultimately found out I was right, and they've now passed rules to protect that. That's what a person who's a patriot does to help their country.
This is our first conversation, so I'm cramming a lot in, and I hope you'll come back and we can dive a little deeper. Let me ask you quickly about the Second Amendment, firearms. You know, this is a huge state. The Commonwealth, I think, leads maybe right behind Texas, although the NRA says there are more registered gun owners in Pennsylvania, I think, than even Texas. What's your position on the Second Amendment, gun ownership?
I strongly in favor of supporting the Constitution, as we've discussed. Every law-abiding American citizen should be allowed to buy the gun of their desire. That's in the Constitution. That's not a what should we do kind of question. It's clear. Now, let's go over why I'm so strongly in favor. My father taught me to hunt when I was 12, 13 years old in central Pennsylvania. I taught my son to shoot before he could run to school, BB guns. But, you know, he's a better shot than me now. We've hunted all over the world. I've got a concealed carry, a dozen guns. However, Chris, the Second Amendment is not about hunting. The Second Amendment is about the ability for us to protect ourselves in the case of an uprising or a government overreach. We've witnessed some of these things pretty clearly over the last 2 years, and we cannot compromise our ability to protect ourselves.
Final question, Doctor. Do you anticipate agreeing to a debate anytime soon? Because I know so far you have not, neither is McCormick or Sands for that matter. Will you participate in debating other candidates?
I won a debate. We actually did have a forum at the state committee about a month ago. I desperately want to be able to face off. I host things. I like talking. I want to be able to mix it up. We wanted to get past this petition period, which the state delayed because of their own inability to make decisions. So once the petitions are in and we actually know who's going to be on the ballot, I think we should start debating and do it a lot. And frankly, the more the better. I think it helps the citizens who've got to make the difficult decision of who to support, understand what our weaknesses are, move away from just advertising, and actually see what we do under fire. What will we do when we're actually serving you in the Senate?
I agree with that. Dr. Oz, thank you for coming in and taking the questions today. I hope you'll come back.
What time tomorrow you want me to be there?
Get some rest out there. I know it's a grueling schedule.
God bless you. Take care, Chris.
Thank you, sir. That's Dr. Mehmet Oz running for Senate in Pennsylvania. Only because we're going to run out of show, folks, I want you to email me. Go to my website, chrisstegall.com. Email me your thoughts about that interview. We will take calls for sure tomorrow, but I'm sorry we're tight on time, but I wanted to use as much time as we could to talk as long as we could with Dr. Oz. So email me, chrisstegall.com today, or we'll take your calls and reaction to that interview tomorrow on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. A Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. 3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.